This episode of Shutters Inc. is brought to you by Hedge for Mac, your best resource for data backup on OS X. It's the fastest, safest backup routine for your video, photo, and audio assets with full bit-perfect copy and verification. Go to hedgeformac.com/shuttersinc for more info and to obtain a 20% discount exclusively for Shutters Inc. listeners.
This is Shutters Inc. with Bruce Williams and Glyn Lavender.
Hi, and welcome to episode 336 of Shutters Inc. This is Bruce Williams from ShuttersIncPodcast.com, and joining me via Skype from CreativePhotoWorkshops.com.au, Mr. Glyn Lavender. How are you?
You know, this is nap time. You're waking me up from nap time to do this podcast.
Because it's the middle of the afternoon.
What are you doing to me? I got my pillow out, got my blankie.
got your hot water bottle.
Nice little cuddle up on the couch. And you want a podcast. Just because you're homesick doesn't mean all of the rest of us have to stop our normal everyday routine.
So how have you been?
I'm better than you by the sounds of it.
I'm struggling along. I'm pushing
tell
through
us about it, darling. How's the man flu going? Are you okay?
I'll survive.
Precious. Tell us all about it. Come on.
There's nothing to tell. Just the regular symptoms, you know, headache, post-nasal drip, sore throat,
moaning.
All the usual.
Yeah. Driving your wife crazy. No one's ever had it as bad as me.
That's it. What did I say? I saw a meme on Facebook the other day that said the pain of childbirth is almost as bad as man flu.
That's going to go down well, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. How to win friends and influence people.
Yeah. Anyway.
So what have you been up to this week?
Well, it's only been a few days since we last recorded, hasn't it?
Five days.
Yeah. So not a lot, because it's like just enough time to get a good couple of naps in. I did a workshop on Friday.
Right.
I did a shoot on Sunday for the breast Cancer Council calendar.
Oh, wow.
Which is not something I was planning on doing. Right. I'm the photographic director for this calendar.
Okay.
And what I mean by that is that months ago they approached me, can I assist in this project? And I said, I'd love to, but I'm away for 3 months pretty much, and all the way through all the time that you're going to be doing it all the shooting, it's all around Australia, shooting all the east coast of Australia anyway. Yeah. So I'm not going to be around to be able to help you. They said, well, can we use you as a guide at the end to give us your opinions on the images we can use, blah, blah, blah. And I said, yeah, I can be a creative director, no problem at all. So I came to reviewing the photos last week.
Yeah.
And I kind of asked them, could you not have my name on the calendar?
Oh.
Don't put my name on the calendar.
Wow.
I'm feeling bad now when someone's listening.
So you didn't shoot the images?
I didn't shoot any of the images, no. But I guess, look, there's a couple of problems. I mean, the levels of photographers' skills were varied.
Right.
But I don't think part of the other problem was, I think the people who's, because it's all body painted women who survived breast cancer.
Right.
Are the subjects.
Yeah.
And I don't know if their vision of what they wanted the shots to be was quite portrayed enough, understood enough, if it was within people's understanding and grasp to be able to shoot, if people who were there, who were running the show, were looking at the images and they should have probably had a bit more control about maybe changing things around a bit.
Right.
So the volume of usable images is less than you would like.
Right.
For example, there's one location that was used, which is just, I mean, a place I've always wanted to get into, never been able to get into. It's just, sacrosanct, this particular place.
Right.
Well, they got to get into it and shoot in it.
Wow.
And none of the shots are usable.
Oh.
I know. So it's like, oh, man, because that's would have been such a great, I don't want to say where it was because I don't, by chance to get back to the person who shot it. But it's just like, oh, yeah, just if people have been, I know I do the same myself. You get excited during the shoot sometimes and you miss important bits.
Yep.
Yeah, or stuff that helps
use tell the story
or use the place as to its best.
Yep.
And so there's these shots there that have this potential, but because X amount of it is chopped off, it just doesn't do it. It just misses out. So that was all disappointing. And then this one Melbourne photographer had a problem with his computer that he lost all his images.
Oh, no.
His hard drive, so that he'd uploaded all like low-res JPEGs for them to look at.
Yep.
And then his hard drive and his computer promptly failed. Oh. He'd reformatted and reused all his cards, and he had no backup.
Oh, no.
No, so we're talking about a 9 to 10 hour paint job done on this model.
Yep.
Shot to be done. And it's like, well, we've got no choice. We just have to reshoot it.
Yeah, right.
And so it came down that, okay, well, I'd be the one to reshoot it for A, to hopefully get, how do we say this politically correctly, a better photo. stronger images. There you go. Stronger images. But also that, because, I'd be involved and, it kind of makes things faster and quicker if I'd got it all done and stuff. So I ended up doing the shoot on Sunday afternoon.
Right.
So it's a 9 hour paint job. So it started at 7 o'clock in the morning and 4 o'clock in the afternoon. It's just finishing up.
So is this just to do one of the 12 images?
One person of one image, yeah.
Yeah, right.
So 9 hours of body painting. So, I mean, by 4 o'clock in the afternoon, I mean, the temperature was already down to like 7 or 8 degrees.
Oy, which is, oy, oy.
45 or something Fahrenheit or something.
Yeah, right.
So it was already, and if you're only wearing undies and body paint, that's pretty darn cold.
Ooh, plus
daylight. So we've only got an hour or so of daylight left by the time we got on location.
Oh, so it was an external shoot.
Outdoors in front of an iconic Melbourne location.
Right.
And with rapidly diminishing temperatures and rapidly diminishing lights.
Oh, jeez.
So it was a struggle. It was, I can't show any images yet because they're all under NDA and stuff, but we managed to get a couple of images.
Cool.
This is an interesting thing. I mean, they're all going to me, how do we pose the model? And I'm going, well, I'm struggling here to pose the model. And they're going, why? Well, I said, well, the arms are a problem. And arms are a problem for a lot of photographers.
Right.
And how to pose in the way. But when you can't cover up the body, because the entire body is body painted and it needs to be shown off the artwork that's on the body, well, it's really hard to do something then with those arms that don't look stupid.
Yeah, right.
It doesn't look like you're a teapot or you're falling over or you're grabbing your head because you've got a headache. Or it's very difficult to position two arms away from a body.
Yep.
And
in a way that looks elegant. Yeah.
So that was actually the hardest part of the shoot.
Yeah, right.
It was just damn arms looking reasonably okay. And it's just like we were just pulling our hair out. It was like, this is crazy. The hardest part. Everything else. I mean, I did all off camera flash. The shot was exposure wise. The shot was ready in 30 seconds.
Yeah.
It took us an hour and a half to get something that we liked. Well, enough images that we liked.
Yeah.
Plus, they had to do all these other silly ones they wanted doing a series of 10 photos with a black background with the model doing 10 to 1 finger countdown.
Oh, okay.
And the model with white background doing a 10 to 1 finger countdown. And then the model with stuff written on her hands, all this sort of editorial behind-the-scenes stuff needed doing as well. So we did all in an hour and a half.
Wow.
Plus the shoot. So it was challenging. Yeah.
Wow.
And it was, and she was, the poor girl, she was shaking like a leaf. Physically moving continually. It's like the poor kid. Woman, should just call a kid. She's probably younger than me, but couldn't call a kid. But so that was tough.
Was tough.
So here's the silly thing, though. So here's where it gets a bit tough for me. Is during the previous week, I'd been reviewing all the images from the other photographers and being my usual kind and gentle critique that I am.
Yeah.
To the organisers, and then all of a sudden it's time to put my money where my mouth was. Like, oh, they said, well, you've said all these things about these other photographers, now it's time for you to show
us what you got.
Okay.
Oh, dear.
So I'm trying to use a nom de plume for my name in the photograph. So that was and it's interesting because it's been a while since I've worked with clients, and then you've got their deadlines and non-disclosure agreements to sign and all sorts of other obligations and public liability stuff you've got to show, and it's just so much effort working for people. So much easier not to. So easier not to. So that was my kind of couple of days. Yeah, the workshop and prepping for a shoot, and then last day or so just getting the images ready. Yeah.
Yeah, right.
So that's all done. All the images are done and uploaded and gone. And, they are what they are.
Yeah.
But a few people I've shown them to, the actual organisers haven't heard from them yet, so I don't know if they've seen them yet. But the other photographer I know who I showed a couple of the images strictly under, just to get some feedback, yeah. She reckons they're pretty darn good, so I'll cool. take her. Good.
Wow.
What have you been up to? Besides
me? Just work. Mixing Dave's album. So photographically, not much.
So something normal then.
Yeah. Got the camera out last weekend. It was Kath's birthday, and we had a family barbecue up at a park up on the top of the mountain behind where we live.
Oh, yeah.
And, yeah, so I grabbed a couple of images there, just a group shot and some of the kookaburras, and it was got a really nice shot of these five kookaburras all sitting side by side facing us. Like,
really?
All side by side, like, all, like, 10 centimetres apart from each other. It was like the jury.
And how's it look? Is it good?
It's on Facebook. If you go to my profile, you'll see the image there. So they were probably 10 metres away, so I was firing with full flash. Nice. But I thought it came up all right. I mean, yeah, background's not brilliant, but you're limited to what you can do when you're shooting up into the trees. So
yeah, you're right there.
But I thought it was pretty cool to see five of them sitting side by side like that.
Absolutely.
And it was because we were cooking meat, and you know, the kids were dropping bits of sausages on the ground and things like that. So the kookaburras were just sitting there waiting for the opportunity. So
I'm sure they're tuned for humans.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh yeah, it's not bad.
Yeah.
You could have got the one on the left to dip its beak down. He's shooting at its beak, dude. It's just, yeah.
You know what they say about working with children and animals.
You know, the decisive moment, my friend, yeah.
Yeah, so.
Yeah. So we took a photo, at least. There you go.
Yep, there we go.
Okay, so what we...
So what do you got on your agenda this week?
I've got a few things. I was looking at this new piece of software called Picturesque.
Oh, okay.
And there's a couple of things I find interesting with it. First up, it's a so-called smart software that when you want to download images from the card, it automatically selects the good and the bad ones.
Based on what criteria?
Based on how it feels about your art.
Like, I don't have enough of an inferiority complex as it is. I'm now being judged by my software.
It puts them into an order of what it thinks is the best to the least best, and puts little garbage can pictures on the ones that it thinks are completely. But here's the thing, though. See, it doesn't download any of the photos onto your computer.
Oh, okay.
It's like a pre-sorting system before you download onto your computer.
Oh, okay.
So you go through. This is what I like about it. You pre-sort. It goes through, judges what it thinks are the best photos, and obviously you can edit around that.
Yep.
Decide if that's true or not true, and it's only once you've gone through the whole process of sorting, and it also puts images into categories of like landscapes, portraits, product shots automatically. Okay, so groups images together automatically, and then once you've decided. That's actually the images you want. They're only the images that gets downloaded onto your computer.
Oh, okay.
Not deleting off all these hundreds, or if you ever get around to it, deleting off hundreds of photos you're never going to use.
Yep.
Or simply clogging up your system with hundreds of photos you're never going to use.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's an interesting thing. But I like reading the review, and I've got the link for the review there. The guy's going, talking about the part where it sorts, it breaks your images. Those with a sensitive nature should avoid this stage, as the program's mathematical opinion will not necessarily reflect everyone's perceptions of their artistic brilliance. Oh, God. So that could be you.
So basically what they're saying is your images aren't as good as you think they are.
Exactly. And I had to remind myself that it was a machine I was dealing with, so I didn't have to take things personally. I hope Picturesque has good insurance to pay for users' trauma therapy. And the company doesn't claim Picturesque can make judgments of taste.
Right. It's an interesting concept.
It is. But this other quote in the thing too goes, in some instances, I was glad of Picturesque's help in selecting the best frames from each group. But in others, I was left slightly mystified by the way my images had been treated, like entering a camera club competition.
Yeah.
But look, I think it's an interesting... way forward,
yeah,
for dealing with the volume of images captured.
Yeah,
yeah. yeah, I can see this type of as this stuff gets smarter and smarter, and I'd like to see software that learns from the types of images that the end user does.
Yep.
So it sort of grows to know your style and your preferences by what you select and what you don't select.
Yeah.
What you override and what you don't override. That if future versions can learn from that sort of stuff, it could be quite a useful tool.
Yeah, absolutely.
Imagine you come back from your holidays with 6,000 photos and it can cull it down to 1,000 or 15 or whatever.
Yeah.
And without having to download those other 4,500 onto your computer.
Yeah. That's, as you say, you know, as it learns over time, that will grow to be very useful.
Future versions would have that ability to learn, So I think it's got a watch me space.
Yeah, definitely.
You can keep an eye on that sort of idea. Speaking of another, I'll jump into another bit of software which I found, which is quite amazing. It's called Unfade.
Right.
But it's basically an iPhone app. So you walk up to like an old faded like photo from the 70s.
Yeah.
You take a photo with your phone with this app and it unfades it.
What?
It brings back the color and the sharpness and the contrast.
Really?
Yeah. Unfade.
Okay.
And it basically uses filters, I think. So it gives you like a range of options to which one you choose out of this, from this image of these six variations, which is the one that is most pleasing to you, I would imagine. So it basically will add, it'll recolor, change contrast, add some saturation, that kind of stuff.
Wow. Presumably it can detect when certain regions of the visual spectrum have faded more than others and compensate for all that.
The what?
So, well, you know how, like, you look at an old print from, say, the 80s, and quite often the blues and the greens will have faded and you're left with this mishmash of yellows and reds.
Yeah.
That sort of thing. That's what I'm saying.
That's called an Instagram filter.
But I'm guessing that, this would be designed to have...
Exactly. It'll know where the common... I would imagine it understands where the common fading patterns are and what the problems are, and it'll sort of counteract that.
Wow.
So kind of a nifty idea again. Something a little different. I saw one, so I didn't actually link it. I saw this one as well, where say if you're scanning someone's your photo album, you can do your auntie's place and she's got out the old photo albums as an example. You can put your phone over the whole page. It'll shoot the page, but it'll also automatically cut out each photo individually.
Oh, nice.
It's got like a picture of like six pictures. It'll go bang, 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 change.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. So what you're saying is I should have got that link too.
No, that is cool. The reason I maybe sound a little over enthusiastic regarding that was because in January of this year when I was in WA and catching up with my grandmother who's in her 90s, I was going through her photo albums.
Yeah.
And there were a bunch of photos that I'd never seen and some stuff that was really historical that dated back to when she was a teenager I just simply put them on the floor and then took photos of them with my 850. And then, when I got home, I sort of cropped them and,
Had to do all that work.
Yeah. And so something like that would be awesome.
Well, I'll see if I can find the...
But I'm assuming this is a phone app, right?
Phone app, yeah.
Yeah. So can't really use it with your RAW files out of your DSLR.
No.
No.
Yeah. Only what you want out of the images.
But it's a great concept.
Here we go. It's called PhotoMine, MYNE. So I'm going to send you the link right now, young man, so you have that for the how's that for efficiency? It's almost like we're good at our job then for a second.
Almost.
We talked about something, then we made it happen. Wow.
Yeah, no, that's
so
cool.
If you combine that with Unfade.
Yeah.
Those old photos, bang,
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, very so cool. That's a nifty little app anyway. So for exactly that sort of purpose, I think. Speaking of Western Australia, my wife's mother, my mother-in-law, my mother-in-law's family's from Western Australia and most of them still live over there.
Right.
And the local little information booth got a call just a week or so ago from a woman asking if they could find any information about where a certain grave was. And the grave happens to be her mum's mum. So my mother-in-law's grandmother's grave, this woman was looking for. And turns out the woman who answered the phone is one of the family, because it's small town. And so she said, "Oh, you got to talk to my uncle," and blah, blah, blah. And anyway, they're actually family of my wife's, turns out to be. Right. And they're 15 minutes from us.
Oh, what, in Melbourne?
Yeah, but the family's been separated for that branch of the family's not been together for 60 or 80 years.
Wow.
And so the branches have gone completely their own way and don't really have much knowledge of each other. And all of a sudden, there's this link because this one girl's looking up family history.
Yep.
And bang, 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 and now there's my mother-in-law and this woman.
Wow.
Is now back from Perth from holidays, and they were getting together and sharing family albums and sharing family trees. And
wow.
Filling in all these gaps of people's families. It's quite remarkable how that stuff happens.
Yeah. I don't know if you were... I think you were hosting this podcast with me in 2013 when I went to Borneo for the first time.
Yeah, I was, yes.
Yeah, I don't know if you remember.
I was so happy that you went because it's like a couple of weeks off.
I don't know if you remember, but there was a kind of similar thing where we went to this war memorial and I shot this photo of the honour wall at the war memorial. And this is a war memorial for Australian POWs who died on the Sandakan death marches. And I happened to post that photo that very night to my Facebook profile. And a guy who works for a company that we deal with quite a lot at the radio station reached out to me the next day and said, "Mate, can't believe you took this photo and happened to post it, you know, because hidden right behind that poppy," which I'd used as like the main subject of the image, even though I had it, you know, pushed hard up against the left edge of the frame. Yeah. He said, "Hidden right behind that poppy is my great-grandfather's name on the honour wall."
Wow.
That's like, wow, talk about a small world.
Amazing, isn't it?
You know, of 2,800 guys who died in those death marches, I happened to take a photograph right, you know, right where his great-grandfather's name was.
Man.
Yeah, anyway. Small world.
Sends shivers down my spine.
So you saw the story about Western Digital buying SanDisk.
Yes, I think we talked about it a couple of weeks ago. I thought there was rumours around that that it was in the play, that SanDisk were up for sale.
Yep.
And there you go. And obviously because all data's heading towards solid state, and SanDisk... obviously fairly good at solid state data storage.
Yep.
And it makes sense for a lot of Western Digital to buy them, and $17 billion or something. That's
so
fair old.
What was the motivation for, like, was SanDisk owned by somebody else?
I don't think so.
Or was this just an acquisition?
They just decided they wanted to sell, and so someone bought them. And right. Western Digital's motivation, of course, is to get their proprietary SSD technology.
Right.
And start incorporating that into more and more Western Digital stuff.
Yeah, right.
So that was.
And what was it? $17 billion.
$17 billion.
That's a nice little payday for somebody.
Oof! It's just astounding, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's hard to imagine that. Yeah, a memory company that sells memory cards and hard drives and stuff are actually worth that much. Yeah.
Well, you know, it's a big market. SanDisk, I know, you know, one of their major competitors is one of your sponsors, but SanDisk are a pretty big player in the camera memory market.
Yeah, but I mean, so the camera memory market's not very big.
Really?
Well, not 17 billion just by Canon. In fact, I'm pretty sure the way Canon's losing money, they'd sell it for 17 billion and be very happy. So that's a significant sum. But I did notice that Western Digital said that their main competitors were Samsung and Micron.
Right.
Which is interesting because Micron's not a name that we sort of really associate
with memory.
Obviously they are. But obviously they're all more sort of internal products that you buy that have memory or who knows. But as a standalone brand, we certainly don't see as much of it down here in Australia.
Yeah.
I thought that was a bit interesting.
Now, while we're on the topic of data backup, it's probably a good time to mention our sponsor for this episode.
And before we mention that, did I mention that the guy who I had to do the photo shoot for lost all his photos because he didn't do photo backup?
You did.
It's funny about that.
It is.
Did you say sponsor?
We do. We have a sponsor for the next four episodes.
We sold out.
We sold out, man.
Woo-hoo!
We've gone commercial.
I'm in the money.
Yeah, it'll get you a coffee.
Yeah.
So many thanks to Hedge for Mac for coming on board as a sponsor for the next four episodes of Shutters Inc. Basically, what Hedge for Mac offer is a backup solution for pretty much all your digital assets. So videos, photos, and audio. And this is a great system. Obviously, it is a Mac-only system. And Glyn's going to try the product out over the next week or two and give us a bit of a spiel about how it works.
Better get me some then.
Yeah. So Hedge is the fastest app for importing and backing up media on OS X.
You sound like you're reading a script.
Say again?
Sound like you're reading a script.
Well, yeah, he's given me some bullet points.
Oh, okay, good.
Yeah. It's the simplest interface you'll find, but very powerful.
How simple is the interface, Bruce?
It's super simple.
Is it
so simple, even you can manage it?
If we talk like this, it doesn't sound like it's a script.
So does video, photo, and audio. You can import, I like this idea, multiple sources to multiple destinations simultaneously.
Wow.
So that's pretty cool.
Like
Egypt things
in England.
Hey?
You can, to Egypt and England, that's multiple destinations.
Maybe. But I'm thinking about, you know, Lightroom will allow you to make a duplicate of the images you import, but you can only import from one source at a time. Where this will allow you to import from multiple sources, so you could have multiple cards.
Yeah.
You know, so depending on the devices you're shooting with, you might have video assets on one memory card, but photographic, you know, assets on another. You can be importing them both simultaneously. And you can be making duplicates of them as you back them up. So it's not, you know, not just copying one instance of it, but creating two copies of the source data, which is pretty cool.
Cool.
Optimized for files 100 megs or larger. Hedge's Fastlane, which is a product that you only get when you buy the premium subscription, which is not stupidly expensive. It's $99, which I think is quite a reasonable price to pay for
how long?
For how long? It's a one-off payment.
So it's not like Adobe where you got to pay every single month.
No, it is not like that.
I'm trying to sell it up there.
So I think
it's
that's
a one-off fee.
That's
yeah.
not a bad price for, you know, the ability to have a solid backup that you know you can rely on. Every file that is copied is bit verified, so that it you know the software makes sure that every single bit got copied exactly the way it was meant to be. Full support for network attached storage, NAS, RAID, and for uploading to cloud providers. And there's a scripting language which will allow you to sort your assets, to transcode any video assets should they need to be transcoded, to rename and to tag your media after you've imported it. So, yeah, sounds like a great product. I'm, you know, kind of disappointed I don't use a Mac now. But sounds like a great product, and we certainly thank them for being a sponsor of Shutters Inc.
And what do we use it for?
For backing up your photos. And your videos and your audio. And
where?
You will
Which,
find...
How big cloud storage do I get with it?
None, because you use your own cloud storage. So you could back up to OneDrive, you could back up to Google Drive, you could back up to, yeah, any
your
cloud.
NAS at the same time.
Yeah.
Google Photos.
Yeah. Now, if you have already downloaded this episode of the podcast, which presumably you have because you're now listening to it.
I can't have because we're still recording
that's
it.
That's right. May have noticed if you've been to shuttersincpodcast.com that there is a small banner graphic in the show notes for this episode and for the next three episodes with a link to Hedge for Mac, and it's hedgeformac.com/shuttersinc. I would ask you, if you are going to check this out, please use that link because it lets them know that the traffic came through Shutters Inc. And that would be nice, you know, to know that people who are listening to the podcast actually followed through and went and
had a look at our website. Look at that. What kind of color do you call that? It's like puce and yellow or something.
Mate, you're welcome to redesign it anytime you like.
There's no banner there.
No, there isn't yet.
Oh,
you said this episode hasn't gone up. When this episode goes out on Sunday, there will be show notes attached to this particular episode, and there will be a little banner graphic, and it will be clickable.
Oh.
Amazing technology, this interweb.
And does that give like a discount?
Yeah. So when you click on that banner, that will take you through to Hedge for Mac, at a special page that is specifically set up for Shutters Inc. listeners, and it gives you a 20% discount.
Good stuff.
Yeah. So we thank Hedge for Mac for being a supporter of Shutters Inc.
I look forward to getting my software to trial out and see how we go.
Yeah.
It might even get me off my bum and actually do some backups for us.
That would be good.
It would be excellent.
All right. So the next one up was the content-aware crop.
Yes. Have you seen that?
Oh, I am loving the concept of this.
You are?
It means I won't have to put up with looking at people's crappy horizons not being straight.
That's right. Or even when you're doing a panorama and it needs to sort of chop off bits to get the fix right.
Yeah.
You can now fill all these little funny, weird little gaps that come up when you do a panorama that's not quite perfect or whatever.
Yeah.
It looks really good. I mean, like any content-aware fill, yeah, sometimes it's going to look great. Sometimes it's going to look terrible. But
right.
Yeah. It'll be what it'll be.
Yep.
Yeah, but it's another good step along the way of Photoshoppery.
Yeah, so along with, you know, the aforementioned horizon thing, this, you know, if it detects that you've got a face in the center of the image, it will try and square up the frame according to, you know, the eyes so that the eyes are parallel with the horizon. Just smart things like that. It'll basically just look to straighten your frame up for you. Very clever.
Very, very clever indeed, if it works.
Yeah.
So I just noticed, and I don't know when this has got, how long this is going on for, but Peach Pit, very well-known
publishing company,
have a 50% off sale on a whole bunch of stuff.
Well, it's their spring into summer sale, so presumably it will be through the American summer, which would be July, August, September.
It might not be the whole of
That's a summer. Possibility. That's a good point.
It's because it's spring into summer, so it's the end of spring sale.
Could be.
So anyway, but have a quick look. The reason that piqued my interest is that our friend David Duchemin has just finished his reworking of his book Within the Frame, which I think is probably his best book.
Right.
And he's completely redone the whole thing, and it's not even out yet, but it's on 50% off.
Right.
So you can pre-order at half price.
Nice. So basically, if you buy one publication from Peach Pit, you get 30% off, but if you buy two or more, you get 50% off.
Is that what the deal is?
Yeah, that's pretty good.
It is. I didn't look at the details, but that sounds good.
Yeah.
That could be, so instead of a $50 US book, that's a $25 book, so it could be definitely worthwhile having a look into.
Definitely.
So there's that, and then finally on our list of things was what?
Oh, you had two more. You had the selfie Chinese deaths.
Oh, that's right. Oh, dear. Some Chinese guy is trying to do a selfie at a zoo with a walrus tank behind him.
Right.
He's got too close, and somehow the walrus has grabbed him and dragged him into the tank.
Oh.
And to which the keeper has seen this happen and jumped in the tank as well, and the walrus has drowned them both.
Oh, jeez.
So it's terrible, but oh, my God.
Yeah.
And the irony is that his post was, look how big and strong the walrus is.
So he posted that before he got dragged in, obviously.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, man. I see there's a video linked there too, so I haven't watched the video.
I didn't look at that. But just once again, pay attention. You're holding your camera or your phone up, you're looking at your phone to do your selfie, and you take a step or two back to get a better view, and you step over the edge of a cliff. You've got to be careful. Yeah.
What I don't get is if you're doing a selfie and the walrus is behind you, and you're looking at your camera, looking at yourself, you should be able to see the walrus sneaking up.
It may have done it very slowly. Yeah. Actually, the selfie, the thing, you're so obsessed with yourself anyway that yourself is more important than anything else in the scene anyway. Yeah, really. No, but the last serious thing on the, well, that's serious, but the last thing on my list was old Steve McCurry.
Yeah.
Has vowed to rein in his use of Photoshop, which I thought was very interesting. Because, and I think this is where it sort of falls down, he seems to believe that he is a photo storyteller now, no longer a photojournalist. And a photojournalist, of course, is a very, very, the truth is tantum is everything in photojournalism. Sure. You could be reporting exactly what's happening. Where a photo storyteller, you can do whatever you want. I think where it falls down is, Steve, you may have forgot to tell anybody that you changed. That could have been where it all fell over for you, because he's been copping an awful lot of bad press this year.
Oh, has he?
oh, he's been lambasted from pillar to post this year about his work.
But does he change the content of the image, or is it just curves and contrast and saturation?
Just say montage, so I'm thinking.
Hey?
So there was the word montage being used.
Oh, okay.
There's a few additional things being added to things.
Oh, okay.
Because now he's a storyteller. He's no longer a photojournalist.
Right.
And that's fine. You'd be a storyteller all you damn well want, Mr. McGurry. Maybe if he hadn't told anybody.
Yeah, right.
But advising that this has been altered and people are expecting your work to be exactly as is, that you can see where you might get a little bit of the old grief from the our ever quick to judge photo interest.
Yes.
So that's it. So there's a little link there on the Steve McCurry thing. Anyway, I thought people might.
Yeah.
Whenever we that.
We have one story from Adam this week.
Adam who, sir?
We don't need surnames. When it comes to Adam, it's just Adam. Okay. and this was the story of the photographer who captures tiny post-apocalyptic worlds. I've not yet had a chance to watch the 8-minute video, but the images that are posted on the Petapixel blog post are pretty amazing. And basically, this duo take 7 months to put one of these images together. So they're only turning out, you know, maybe 2 images in a year if they, you know.
If the year goes for 14 months.
That's right. Yes. But, that's a heck of a lot of time to devote to one image.
I hope they're doing other stuff around their lives than just that in those 7.
Well, I did see one of the hyperlinks in the blog post was commissioned commercial projects. So presumably they're also being paid either to do this series or to do other things along the same lines. So yeah, you'd be wanting to get something back from it, wouldn't you?
You'd want a little bit of return on the investment, wouldn't you?
Yeah, 7 months.
So, I mean, because you want to spend 7 months building a tiny, basically a post-apocalyptic doll's house.
Yeah.
And then take photos of said doll's house.
Yeah.
About 4 months after my wife and I got together as a couple, she bought a doll's house and started decorating it. And 19 years later, I can see it here where the kids have mostly destroyed it, but she's still never got around to finishing it. So I can see why their project's never done, though, because, you know,
yeah, right.
Some stuff just never gets finished.
Yeah. and believe it or not, today marks, as we're recording this, which is Wednesday, 10 years since Sony acquired all of Konica Minolta's SL or DSLR intellectual property.
Really?
That has flown by.
Has it?
Yes.
Eternity ago to me, but I've got to say, they've come a long way in 10 years.
Definitely. Definitely. Because speculation still abounds as to whether or not Sony will continue development of the A-mount series. It's certainly been a while since they released an A-mount camera, and all of their energy at the moment seems to be on E-mount and the whole mirrorless system. So not sure whether we'll see any more A-mount stuff or not, but yeah, that 10 years has flown by. I remember I just got my first DSLR, which was the Konica Minolta 7D.
That's right.
I picked it up about a month before the announcement came through and at the time I thought, well, this can only be a good thing because Konica Minolta were struggling in the DSLR.
See, that's why you went out and bought one of those.
No, I bought it because I'd always shot Minolta and I had Minolta lenses, and so it made sense to stay with the system that had the same mount. I could use my old lenses. That was really the only criteria that I based the decision on. Yeah, and I thought at the time, well, this would be a good thing. You know, Sony, with all of their, you know, marketing muscle, will probably do big things with it. And I think, yeah, we could say that they have. I think they've shaken the market up considerably in the last 10 years.
It's changed the landscape, I was going to say, and some of the portraits.
I see what you did there. Now, I have to offer an apology to Steve Peters.
What?
Because we glossed over his story last week and he was a little bit miffed.
Was he?
He was.
He was miffed. It was a very long episode. What was his story?
This was the story about the interview with the guy from the data recovery company.
Oh, yes.
And I kind of glossed over it and went, yeah, too technical, haven't read it, sure it's great, go have a look.
What was his problem with that?
He gave me an earful on the Shutterzinc Facebook page about how if I'd bothered to read it, I would have understood why he'd sent it in.
I think if you bothered to read why he was upset, you might be...
If I'd bothered to read the interview, I might have understood why he'd submitted the story.
Why did he send you the story?
Okay, so this guy who was interviewed, David Zimmerman, CEO of LC Technology, basically his company specializes in data recovery, and there were some interesting tips. I did read the interview yesterday, Steve, so I said I would, and I have followed through with that. There were a couple of interesting points in there. One was about he recommends that you don't delete images from your memory cards while you're still using those memory cards, simply because when a card is wiped and free of all images, as you shoot, the data is written sequentially, as you would expect on any, you know, digital storage device. It's like one big matrix of cells in which data can be stored, and it just fills them up in sequence. If you then go and start deleting images in the, you know, course of shooting, you realize that you need another 20 frames and you've only got 10 frames left on the card before the card's full, and you think it's too much effort to change to another card now, I'll just delete 10 images. He raises the point that not all images are the same size, and it comes down to how complex the image is. Now, this is more of a factor when you're shooting JPEG than it is with RAW. He reckons that even RAW images can be a different size, although I'm not sure I believe that. But anyway, he's the expert, so I'll trust him. But definitely with JPEG, if you shoot an image that's all sky, you know, because you were looking at your camera and you accidentally, you know, you're looking at the lens of your camera and you've got it pointed towards the sky and you accidentally press the shutter button, you end up with a JPEG of all sky. And it's all just all blue dots. That's going to compress very well and create quite a small space on your memory card. If you then delete that space in order to fit, you know, that last image onto the card, your camera then has to store what it can of the final image you've shot into that little space, and then the remainder somewhere else on the card, presumably at the tail end. And so you end up with fragmented data. And this David Zimmerman was saying that that can cause issues. He also says that you shouldn't format the card in the camera. He reckons you're better off to format your memory cards through your computer and to do it with a utility that not only wipes the data but writes blank data to the whole of the card. And the reason for that, again, is because when you use a computer to delete a file off a device like an SD card, all it does is overwrite the very first part of the file header. The rest of the data stays there, and then it gets overwritten the next time, you know, your camera needs to store an image. If you then have issues with the card and you need to send it off to a company like LC Technology to have them restore that data, it can become confusing as to which images were recently shot and which ones had been deleted but hadn't been overwritten yet. So there's all these interesting little, you know, quirks to the way files are written and deleted from these storage cards. So there were a few interesting points in there. And he also had something to say about SSDs. He talks about how there are multiple manufacturers, and they're all basically playing their own game. They're all using their own standards. There isn't a unified standard in the way the data controllers are created. And so you've got about 16 different types of SSD out on the market, which means that if there is a failure with a solid-state drive, it's much harder for companies like LC Technology to do anything with it because they have to find out what type of controller the SSD is using. And with so many types on the market, it can be, you know, quite a headache. Although I would imagine if you were running a company like that, you'd be across all of the variables and, you know, they probably just charge you more for something that they can look up in 5 minutes flat anyway. But, yeah, so the whole deleting things, that's an interesting one.
Never to delete photos on their cameras.
What?
Never ever delete, for exactly that reason.
You don't?
Yeah, and I tell customers never to do it. Never delete on your camera.
Right.
Can you memory's cheap, buy more cards.
Can you come a little closer to the mic?
Oh, if I have to.
You sound like you're in the dunny.
So... I'm actually closer to the mic now than I was before.
Right.
Anyway, so I've always said never delete photos on your camera at all, ever.
Right.
It's a bad idea. Buy more memory cards. They're cheap.
And that was one of the things that he said in the article. He said, you know, he recommends that particularly for commercial photographers, just buy memory cards for each shoot you have to do and don't ever delete them.
Well, yeah, just it built into the cost of your custom if you have to.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
If you're doing a $10,000, $15,000 job, well, a couple hundred bucks extra for memory cards isn't going to hurt anything, is it?
No, that's right. Yeah, so my apologies, Steve. I'm sorry I glossed over it last week, and you were right. It was worth a read. So I will put that link in the show notes for a second week. So if you ignored it like I did last week, you can pay attention to it this week.
Ignore it again.
All right. Well, I think that's it for this week.
I think we're more than done.
Yeah.
go pick the kids up from school, which is that's a first effort from the podcast.
Yeah.
Finish recording, go pick the kids up from school.
Exactly.
That's nice to have some variety.
Yeah, definitely.
I'll try that again next Thursday's podcast because we finish at about 10 o'clock at night. Then I'll go pick them up at school. They won't like that at all.
No, probably not.
Boy, you're only here 7 hours. Stop your whining.
All right, mate. You have a good week.
I will. Take care of yourself. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
ShutterZinkPodcast.com.
AnotherAudioTeer.com quality podcast.
For questions, comments, and feedback, email theboys@ShutterZinkPodcast.com.